translation. This is work that I did with my student, Neil Barnaby. And I'll tell you in a moment why I'm showing this waterfall. So briefly, I'm going to give you a quick introduction to the hybrid inflation model and the idea of tachyonic preheating. And then instead of telling you in detail how we went about this, I'm first going to show you our results. And then after you see them, you can decide whether you're interested in some of the details having to do with computing in second-order cosmological perturbation theory, the contribution of tachyonic fluctuations. And then I'll give you some conclusions and a few things that we're working on that aren't in this already published paper. So the hybrid inflation model, well, it was mentioned already in Dick's talk, and it's a very highly motivated model from the point of view of particle physics, and as I'll mention, string theory. And people like it because unlike a simpler model like chaotic inflation, it doesn't require you to use super Planckian field values, so theoretically it's very well under control. And so I showed this waterfall at the beginning because there are two fields. There's the inflaton field, it's the flat direction, that's phi. And then sigma, this waterfall or tachyonic field, is the field whose mass squared changes sign as you roll along the inflaton trough and it becomes unstable and rolls down one side or the other, sort of resembling a waterfall. And that's what triggers the end of inflation in this model. So here's a naive picture of the inflaton path. But as Lev Kaufman and his collaborators have shown us, that naive picture is a little bit too crude. And more accurately, you should think that before you settle down to one of these classical trajectories, there are some large fluctuations occurring in the tachyonic field. And so there's an important quantum mechanical behavior in that field before you really settle down to these classical minima. And as you do so, some parts of the universe will end up in different minima. And in between them, you will get domain walls. These domain walls have to be made unstable somehow, because otherwise they would overclose the universe. So we assume that there's some symmetry breaking effect that gets rid of the domain walls. And initially, those regions are very close to each other. They're only microscopically, in terms of distance scale, separated. So it really makes sense to think that during this period, until inflation ends, the BEV of the tachyon field is still zero, because it's averaging to zero on any cosmologically interesting scale. And anyway, it's these tachyonic fluctuations which are going to be important for what I have to say. And they lead to two potentially observable effects. The first one is that at second order in cosmological perturbation theory, they contribute something to the power spectrum, which is normally just a nearly scale invariant contribution from the inflaton. It turns out that these contributions from the tachyon field, which are happening at the end of inflation, not at horizon crossing, have a non-scale invariant spectrum, which is a spectral index of 4. So it looks like this yellow addition that's coming up through the usual inflaton contribution. And then it cuts off at a scale which is determined by the mass of the tachyon. It cuts off rather rapidly. And so if this is really going on, that will give a huge distortion to the cosmic microwave background at large k values, that is, small angular scales. Okay, so that's going to give us one constraint. And another potential signal is non-Gaussianity, that is, these contributions of the tachyon field to the three-dimensional curvature perturbation, which is related to the density perturbation, these are non-Gaussian. They're bilinear in the tachyon field. And so they make a contribution to this statistic of non-Gaussianity called the bispectrum. It's just the three-point function, the connected part of the three-point function of the curvature perturbation, which is conventionally parametrized in this way, a function b of k. It's parametrized in this way, which is motivated by single field inflation. And the parameterization is that it's some number times the product of the usual power spectrum that's nearly scale invariant. And so if we were just looking at the contributions from the inflaton, this function appearing in the bispectrum would be scale invariant. Scale invariant for the bispectrum would be 1 over k to the 6. But just like the contribution to the spectrum was non-scale invariant, our tachyonic contributions to this bispectrum are also non-scale invariant. They're constant. And so they don't fall off at large k. They're constant, and therefore you get the biggest effect from the largest k values, just as was the case for the spectrum. OK, so those are the potential signals and the constraints from experiment. Well, there's a constraint on this nonlinearity parameter, which I showed you here, that's characterizing the size of non-Gaussianity. In single field inflation models, that's very small. It's suppressed by slow roll parameters. And the experimental constraint is much weaker. This number could be on the order of 100 currently. The Planck mission will push that down to order 5 or so. So that gives us one constraint. And it turns out that the more stringent constraint comes from the first effect I mentioned, which is the distortion of the spectrum. And we parameterize that just by defining a so-called linear parameter, which is just the ratio of the tachyonic amplitude to the usual inflaton contribution, defined at some scale where the data is most sensitive. That is the biggest scale where those two curves were crossing, and the data is still sensitive. And so we just very conservatively demand that that distortion can't be bigger than the usual scale invariant contribution. So we could actually have taken that to be more stringent, but this is good enough. And now I'll show you the kind of constraints we get on the model of hybrid inflation. If you remember the potential I showed you, it had some parameters. There was the quartic coupling of the tachyon field. G was the cross coupling of the inflaton and the tachyon. V is the VEV of the tachyon. M phi is the mass of the inflaton. So there's four parameters. We use one constraint, which is the Kobe normalization of the power spectrum. And we use that to eliminate the inflaton mass. So that leaves us with three parameters. And to display the constraints that you get on those three parameters, what we've done is we've fixed one of them. In this case, it's the VEV of the tachyon field over the Planck mass. So in this example, I'm taking it to be 10 to the minus 3 of the Planck mass. And here I'm plotting in the plane of the other two parameters, the dimensionless coupling. This is the logarithm of the tachyon self-coupling and the logarithm of the cross-coupling. So this is a huge region of parameter space, since it's logs. And there are various regions which wouldn't be suitable for reasons other than the one I want to talk about. For instance, you might get an unreasonably low reheat temperature, or you might get a spectral index which is too large to be compatible with experiment. Or you might violate the condition that to get inflation, that the false vacuum energy should be dominating over the field-dependent part of the energy density. But then you would be, a priori, left with this other huge region that would be unconstrained. And what I'm claiming is that the new effect that we're considering actually wipes out most of that region, and it only leaves this relatively smaller yellow part. Well, we had to do separate analyses for these two sections, so that's why they're labeled differently. Now let me show you what happens when you change the value of this VEV. So, before I do that, I just want to show you a close-up of this allowed region to illustrate my statement that it's actually the distortion of the spectrum characterized by this linear parameter that gives the strongest constraint, and the non-Gaussianity, which is the thing that we were first motivated by, gives a somewhat weaker constraint. And that's pretty much true over the whole parameter space. So now let me show you what happens if we vary this VEV, and I'm showing you the logarithm of the VEV over the Planck scale. And the ruled out region I showed previously was this blue one, but now I'm varying the VEV over a wide range. And you see that as this VEV gets smaller and smaller, the excluded region gets quite large. And in fact, the regions which are for any given excluded region, also the regions with smaller values of g, are excluded too by the separate analysis. I'll go into the details if I have time. But anyway, these are our results. They're rather impressive looking constraints on the model. And so now I want to tell you how we arrived at those. And one basic tool we needed to use was cosmological perturbation theory at second order in the perturbations, because it's at second order where this tachyonic fluctuation first comes in. So one needs to write down the metric, the components of the metric, at various orders in the density or the cosmological perturbation, and you need to fix a gauge. We've chosen here the longitudinal gauge, which is analogous to Coulomb gauge in electrodynamics. This is one that a lot of people are using. And you have to similarly express the matter fields in terms of their classical trajectories. Actually, this we take to be zero for the tachyon. Its VEV is zero. And then their perturbations. And it turns out that the second order perturbation of the tachyon doesn't enter in, although that of the inflaton does. So then one has to solve these equations to find the quantity of interest. It's this curvature perturbation. That's the thing which is physically related to the CMB temperature fluctuations. And we want to compute correlation functions of that quantity. And you see it's a very complicated thing in terms of the fluctuations that I just defined. And I don't want to belabor the details, but it's defined in terms of slow roll parameters of inflation, the Hubble parameter in conformal time, these Sasaki-Mukhanov variables at first and second order. Anyway, it's a complicated mess. And one has to slog through that. But it's some definite expression. Now, what do we put into that expression? We have to, the source terms in that expression that we're interested in are the quantum fluctuations of this tachyon field. And this is its mode equation, where I've taken a number of E foldings during inflation to be the time variable, because it's basically just linear in the Hubble parameter. And you notice that the mass squared, or the effective mass squared of the tachyon, is going to change sign. We parameterize it as being a linear function of n. That is, we expand the tachyon mass in powers of n. And we confine our analysis to the regime where we can ignore larger than linear terms. And that turns out to be a decent approximation. It turns out that just getting the spectral index to be in the right range is pretty much the same thing as demanding this approximation, which we made just to make it easier to solve this equation. So it was a technical assumption. Okay, so once we've found that, and we've used it in the cosmological perturbation equations to solve for the curvature perturbation, then we just have to compute these correlation functions for the spectrum and the bispectrum using the usual rules of quantum field theory for the two-point function of free fields. And it involves the mode function of the tachyon field that satisfies the equation of motion. This was a very difficult calculation because the expression you finally get for the curvature perturbation, you see, it's a mess. It involves a lot of inverse Laplacians because of this longitudinal gauge that we chose. And so it looks like it's non-local. And in fact, a lot of the intermediate expressions in here, like this gamma and this source J, these also involve inverse Laplacians. And so you might look at this and think that it's a non-local result. And many authors, several authors before us, found that it was non-local. And this was very disturbing to us, because non-locality means that it's acausal, and that's just not physically reasonable. So we had to work very hard to try and figure out what was going on. And we found that there were various cancellations that could be found if you were careful enough with consistency in the slow roll expansion. And after all the dust settles, I have to credit Neil for this, you get a relatively simple expression for the curvature perturbation in terms of this these tachyonic fluctuations. And so that was a big triumph for us to get that result. And to give a little more insight, here's what these mode functions for the tachyon fluctuation look like as a function of time. Before the instability starts, they're decaying like heavy fields. They're damping away through the Hubble expansion. And then when the instability starts, the magnitude of the fluctuations grows exponentially. And this is showing the logarithm of the envelope of that, which you can also, I mean, the exact result is an Airy function, but you can also solve this in the WKB approximation and get simpler approximations. OK, so those are the basic ingredients. There's one more subtlety you have to wonder about, and that is your answer will depend on when you evaluate this thing. If I evaluate it at sufficiently large n, I'll get an arbitrarily huge result. How am I doing on time? 2 minutes, OK. So you have to wonder, well, when do I cut this growth off? And here we appeal to our friends who have worked in detail numerically on tachyonic preheating, who have found that the criterion for inflation to end in these models is that when the size of the fluctuations becomes of order the BEV, then the back reaction is going to stop inflation. And that's when the curvature perturbation will stop evolving too, because then it becomes a single field model where theorems tell you that the curvature is conserved on large scales. So that's how we know when to stop this. And this is a picture of the development of these fluctuations through simulations of Felder et al. So that was the story of that paper. And I just want to mention quickly some generalizations. Now it's more interesting to look at inverted hybrid inflation, where you change a few signs here, because that gives you a spectral index that is more in agreement with WMAP. And well, that tends to make the constraints weaker, because inflation could end before the saturation of those tachyonic fluctuations, just because the inflaton is getting too steep. And so what happens is it wipes out some of our excluded region, but not all of it. So we still have interesting constraints. And finally, the scenario of brain anti-brain inflation fits into this inverted hybrid inflation model. And one can find a mapping between the parameters of string theory, the string coupling and the string mass scale, and the parameters of the inverted hybrid inflation model. And that gives you some constraints on these parameters of string theory. Here's the log of the string coupling and the log of the warped string mass. So that's That's basically what I wanted to tell you. And here's a summary, which I'll let you read. But first, I just want to flash. It was mentioned by Gil, this CBI anomaly. And so we're interested in seeing whether this distortion that we've been just putting constraints on might actually be evidence for this might be a positive signal for tachyonic preheating. So that's something that we're looking at. Thank you.